And a warm welcome now to Dr. Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. Professor Yu, welcome back to the Business Briefing.
A pleasure to be back, Janet.
Professor Yu, so much has changed since we last spoke, and so much is changing in so many directions. But in Europe in particular, I think there's been this growing realization, this epiphany, that they must fend for themselves increasingly in the form of defense spending, economic sovereignty and trade, and so forth. And that increase in defense spending, you say, is also raising questions about the European focus on ESG. Talk to us a little bit about where this is headed in that context.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of Europe, I think reacting to Trump 2.0, the current U.S. president, you see that they are going to spend more on defense, and maybe we can talk in a minute about why they haven't done it before. But you certainly see the U.K. has already pledged to raise its defense spending by £6 billion a year. So that's just under $10 billion or so. And then the EU has committed to spend, to unlock about 800 billion euros. So that's over $1 trillion dollars or so. So the reason is because they are thinking about, I think, if the US becomes less reliable, then the EU and the UK will need to increase spending. But part of that contradiction, and I think this is certainly worth talking about, because for a lot of Europeans, the values they hold, which is a very important part of how they set policy, is around ESG, environment, social, and governance. And I think that debate starts to raise questions about whether or not it is a defensive sector that's compatible with looking after stakeholders as opposed to shareholders. So I think, for the most part, quite a lot of European investors are having this discussion and coming down on the side of, unfortunately, war is a reality, especially in this part of the world, and looking after your stakeholders, so your communities that could be impacted, would mean spending in defense, and that, I think, can be reconciled. But it is, let's be clear, quite a sizable shift, and there's no agreement on this. In fact, I know of some debates which look at, if you want to support, for instance, surveillance drones, are you comfortable funding surveillance drones that they could also deliver weapons? So it is a very active, not quite soul searching, but it is quite a deep discussion, I would say, over here. In fact, Janet, one of the most interesting things bite to me was, I was in Brussels for a meeting, and instead of talking about the actual, whatever it was we were there to talk about in terms of policy, all the participants wanted to sit back and talk about the values that we share first. That took a couple of hours. We got to the actual analysis, and so it really
did impress upon
me why this is such a why it's such an important debate, yeah, and why it's worth flagging. So,
it's that set of shared values, I think, that is in part enabling European leadership to sort of rise to the occasion, to sort of crystallize what it is they really believe, why they believe it, and so forth.
Yeah, completely. And I think if we look at the success of the European Union, a lot of it was actually based on its values in attracting former Soviet Union countries. So this is the early 1990s with the collapse of the Berlin Wall. What you found was that Central and Eastern European countries wanted to join the EU. Many of them did, because of its values around democracy and the market economy. So it is a very different approach, I think, to thinking about policy and thinking about investments. But I think the winds have shifted, and I think there's going to be quite a lot more, probably at startups, now that there's more funding available. And, and unfortunately, because of the era in which we live, I think defense stocks are an area that's probably going to be bolstered in the coming years now on both sides of the Atlantic.
How stimulative is this for European economies? I mean, do you see the increase in defense spending being something that adds economically to the area?
So that was always the debate, because if you look at what's happened in Europe, really since the 2008 global financial crisis, they have found it really challenging to send more, because there was such devastation after that crisis, with the euro crisis, the single currency, debt levels are very high across the region. And Europe doesn't have the U.S.'s ability to borrow very cheaply, because the dollar is the world's reserve currency, and we don't have that on this side of the pond. But because of the urgency of what we're discussing, the EU has loosened its debt rules, and that is pretty significant, because it's not just the EU, it's actually Germany. And Germany has had, for many years, a focus, really, as I say, since the euro crisis, on a balanced budget. I always found it I found it quite interesting, because when we think zero, we kind of mean zero. No, in Germany, when they say a balanced budget, they actually mean a small surplus. So it's actually called the black nil, as in you have black and red on your balance sheet, on your P&L, and they want to see black ink. So when they say a balanced budget, they actually mean 0.3% of GDP surplus. But Germany is now going to be loosening up and estimating that it could spend 2 trillion euros or more in the next decade, analysts say, and that wouldn't actually affect its fiscal sustainability. So if you compare that to the amount the EU has just pledged, I think it gives you a sense of how much change that there is here. Now, for the EU itself, one of the biggest challenges is that it has to set rules which it feels can keep member states on roughly the same basis. So they've always been very reluctant to allow member states to increase spending, but they've actually now given an exemption for defense. So will this be stimulative, which I think is absolutely the right question? Economists who are looking at this think that when you increase public spending, indeed in defense, it will actually boost growth. And looking at the other way it could boost growth is that quite a lot of defense spending can be on technologies that become dual-use technologies, which generate growth in the future. So GPS, for instance, which we use all the time, that came from defense spending in the United States.
We're in conversation with Dr. Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. Professor Yu, that issue of innovation is, I think, a big one, right? Because there has been criticism over the years that the EU simply is not innovating at the same rate as the United States, and that is partly to blame for lower GDP growth, et cetera. But there, the increase in defense spending is one area that can potentially increase innovation. And another is something you wanted to talk about, which is data centers, a sector that is likely to be a beneficiary of Gen AI. Talk to us about data centers generally in Europe, how they're propagating, and how this benefits Gen AI.
Yeah, so data centers, I think, are one of the adjacent sectors if you want to invest in a fast-growing area like Gen AI. So there's lots of ways of thinking about how you can be part of this extraordinary growth of specifically generative AI. So to give you an example as to why I want to speak about a bit about data centers is because half the data in the world was created just in the last 2 years, and that's because of Gen AI. And so the extraordinary increase means there's massive demand for how you store that data. And I'm on the board of Europe's biggest data center company and biggest warehouse company. And it's been absolutely extraordinary seeing how the hyperscalers, so the Amazon Web Services, as big web storage companies, have themselves invested in data centers. So the other reason I think this is a sector which is fascinating but also constrained is because you need a lot of energy to cool data centers. And so one of the challenges is if in Europe you are committed to ESG and sustainability, then being able to run data centers using renewables is really challenging because you just don't at the moment have battery storage or the ability to work easily with the energy grid. And that creates a bit of a contradiction in terms of wanting to invest in this area, wanting to develop in this area, but then also wanting to meet net zero targets by 2050. So, and just to give you another example of why I find the sector really fascinating is, did you know gaming is a bigger industry than films and music put together right now? So if you're a big gamer, and I'm not sure you are, Janet, but if you're a big gamer, the amount of energy that's used when kids come back from school, there's a huge surge in energy use that you can see in the data centers because they're all online doing multiplayer gaming. But that's a real shift from how data and energy used to be managed and budgeted. So I think there's also interesting implications around that. But to me, one of the most exciting sectors, and clearly I'm in the midst of it, is how this thing in Gen AI, how you can think about investing in it, making the most of it, supporting it. And actually, I think data centers are slightly under the radar, but I think the trajectory is only long way at this point. If only we knew how to cool them. So some companies, by the way, are sinking data centers into the deep ocean, which in and of itself is a little bit like a sci-fi film. So anyway, there's a lot of innovation, I think, around this area, which is under the radar.
Doctor, you thank you so much for joining us today. All fascinating developments. Tell us, please, where we can follow you.
Oh, thank you so much. So you can follow me on social media. I'm at Linda Yu, LindaYueh, and that's also my website, lindayueh.com.
That's Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall. Stay tuned after the break. We'll be